Welcome, everybody, to the All About Symbian Insight podcast. This is number 200, believe it or not. We have some fanfares and explosions being let off in Edinburgh.
Oh, I can do explosions.
Please don't.
You can say boom.
This is Tuesday, the 24th of January, 2012. I'm Steve Litchfield. I'm stuffed with cold. That's my excuse for being a day late. And Rafe Blanford, what's your excuse?
Well, I've been running around like a headless camel. I've been in London. Not really anything Symbian related. It was Windows Phone stuff, trying to get hold of a Lumia 710. Although I'm also trying to get hold of a Nokia 603, so we can have a review of that on the site. But it's not being ranged in the UK, which makes it a bit trickier for us to get hold of. So we have to sort of grey import one of those. But we should have a review of that in due course.
Lovely. Also, trying not to produce an explosion and a fanfare and various other celebratory artifacts, up in Scotland we have Mr. Ewan Spence.
Hello, I'm always trying to make an explosion. What do you mean I'm not trying to make an explosion? I take offence at that.
And giving Mr. Rafe Blanford a chance to put his Skype to DND, we have David Gilson up in Hull.
Hi, Steve. I don't need an excuse because I would have been ready to do a podcast yesterday. You see, you all let me down.
I'm sorry. I'm so really sorry. Now, this is podcast 200. I guess it's interesting just to look back. Rafe, what happened in Insight podcast number one? I guess that was about, what, 3 or 4 years ago? What do we have on the show notes back then? Here's a trip down memory lane for us all.
To be completely honest, this isn't actually the 200th podcast. It's actually number 264, because we had 64 non-Insight podcasts, but it is the 200th Insight podcast. So I sort of looked back through the archives to find out what we're talking about that very, very first time. It was published on November the 15th, 2007. So we're going back sort of 4.5 years, I guess, slightly more actually. And then it was talking about the Nokia N82, which had just been announced at Nokia World. What we thought of it, what our initial reaction was, and we were sort of, I think, in love with Nokia's latest camera phone, a bit like Steve still is with the N8, really. Then there was also Nokia audiobooks, which was something in beta labs for listening to audiobooks. I guess that's something in terms of audiobooks, it's still not particularly brilliant on the Symbian platform, although we have, of course, since had things like podcasting come along, but things like Audible have never really taken off in quite the same way. Then we were also talking about things outside the Symbian platform, and we're talking about the very new Google Android platform. So that was in our first insight as well. If we'd known then just how big it was become, maybe we'd have talked about it a bit more. And there were also some software highlights. We're talking about this great freeware text editor, Light Notepad, which was for a 63rd edition phone. So we're talking pre-touch days. You know, this was before there were touch screen handsets around in the Symbian world. So yes, that was a long time ago, 15 megabytes in size and lasting just over 22 minutes. And 200 Insight podcasts later, here we are.
How did we manage to do a podcast in 22 minutes with Rafe?
Thank you.
When he was young.
Well, it did rapidly increase after that. Looking up, that was one of our shortest ever podcasts. And since then, it's regularly been over 35 minutes, and we soon got into our stride, and we've basically had an Insight podcast once a week ever since then, with a few gaps at Christmas time and when we haven't quite been able to get together. But I think that's a pretty impressive track record to get to number 200.
Yeah, well, I think that was about 2 years ago before I actually joined the team. So had I been around, I was writing my master's thesis, so I'd have probably been talking about something about non-Hermitian quantum mechanics.
I think one thing that does illustrate, though, is the eternal dilemma of the pundit. You know, we're talking about what was big that week. And as we've seen from there, some of the technology has survived. Android, I think, is still kicking around. Some of the technology has been left by the wayside. I believe the N82 had this strange mythical thing called, Steve, just correct me here, a physical lens cover. A PLC. Well, I mean, I don't think we've seen PLC support in any other recent device. Perhaps that one of those standards that can come back. But it just goes to show that, you know, what happens in the now isn't necessarily, you know, past performance is not a guide to future performance. But it also shows that, you know, everything is rapidly changing and shifting. And it is great to be able to sit down and just look at how it is. Some things work, some things don't. But it's a fun journey no matter which direction you go.
Don't get me started on retro features from retro handsets. So should be in current day handsets, because we could be here for a while, Ewan. I think camera protection is one of those. David, one more point for you.
Just to pick up on what Ewan was saying, I think the reason, at least for myself, that I want to keep writing about technology and what Nokia are doing and everything is it's just how vastly things have changed. Because back in the times we were talking about, like the N95, the N82, and various other devices were all the things that we loved using, and obviously like physical devices, no touchscreens at all. And it's just amazing that now those devices we love, we wouldn't really choose to use anymore. And
speak
then compare
for yourself.
compare that to the devices that we are all using now, we wouldn't have seen it coming. And it was just it's just amazing to kind of think what may be coming next. Like 2 years on, what are we going to be using?
That's absolutely right. And actually, a good illustration of this is looking at the show notes for All About Insight number 100, which we also celebrated, saying, ooh, aren't we doing well? But then we were talking about the Samsung IT910, and of course, you know, Samsung no longer producing Symbian handsets. In fact, that was their last Symbian handset, effectively. But we were also talking about events. It was Nokia at CES, and they had just released Ovi Maps Racing. That was, I guess, in the height of the days of the Ovi brand. And there were also some things about the Nokia N97 not being terribly effective with Microsoft Exchange. So I think some of the bugs of the N97 rearing their head there. And we're actually looking forward to Nokia MWC, which was going to take place a month later, because this particular podcast was recorded back in January the 9th in 2010. And of course, we've since had over 100 since then. But yes, the point is that things have evolved. I guess one of the things would be fun to do is go back and listen to some of these older podcasts. And I suspect some of the things we talk about and the opinions we have would seem very out of date now and probably almost laughable by the standards of today.
Yeah, I did see someone was quoting an analyst forecast for the industry. I think it was from about 3 years ago, so not too long after our Insight podcast number one, in which the analyst predicted that Symbian in 2013, the smartphone market share will be Symbian at 47%, Windows Mobile at something like 30%, and all the rest trailing behind. That's rather not quite what happened. But it's interesting that we had talked about the birth of Android in our Insight podcast number one. About 4.5 years ago. At that point, Android didn't have touch functionality either. Android was very much in the sort of BlackBerry form factor, wasn't it, Ralph?
That's right. It was just being introduced. I think touch had been added, but you know, the idea of the sort of touch slates, if you like, wasn't there. I mean, you'll remember the first Android device was the T-Mobile G1, which was owed more to the BlackBerry in some ways. I mean, it was a slide-out keyboard and touchscreen and all of that. But yes, Android's sort of origins were very much in that kind of traditional phone form factor of, you know, QWERTY rather than touchscreen. It was only later on, I think, you kind of have to give the credit to Apple here, really, that Android was flexible enough to move pretty early on into the touchscreen-dominated form factor. But yeah, it's interesting that we picked up on it in our very first Insight podcast. I'd like to pretend we were all very far-sighted about what was going to happen, but we always try and keep a sort of eye on what's going on elsewhere in the industry. And I guess we started that pattern in the very first Insight podcast.
Yeah, David?
At the risk of ruining our time schedule, it was just another point that occurred to me to put in here. But I think looking back on the Symbian devices we've used comparing to devices on other platforms, we all know what, and I'm sure listeners know as well, all the things that we value about Symbian. And the fact that Symbian was doing certain things like browsing the web, being a mobile computing device, long before anything else like the iPhone was. But other platforms have gone on and have got the credit for bringing such things to the masses. So it does make you wonder about, in the technology world, is it more to do with the ignorance of mainstream users or the presentation of executives that makes things successful?
I think I'll pick up on this one here. And it's the thing is, everything needs to be in balance. I mean, you need to have hardware, you need to have software, you need to have marketing, you need to have distribution, you need to have sales team. And remember, those sales teams aren't necessarily out there as well. You need to be able to tell a story across the entire range. I think if we look back over the last 2 or 3 years, in a very rough time for Nokia, and I know some people have been drawing comparisons to Kodak and saying, you know, you're not going to pull out of it. And then other people go, yeah, Nokia used to make televisions and tires and boots and stuff. So, you know, there's precedent wherever you look. But it's all about the ability to tell a story. And if there's one thing Steve Jobs was good at, it was telling a story. You know, if there's something that Google has been trying to do with Android, which is telling that story. One of the reasons that I think Google is so muddled is that they don't have that clear story. They're leaving it to partners to tell. And that was one of the issues Symbian had in its last couple of years. It didn't have anybody at the top that had the ability to tell a story coherently, which meant that what people were hearing was muddled at every part of the chain. And that kind of dulled the edges. I mean, the difference is it's like Dune. You know, if you sit down and try and read Dune, oh dear. If somebody comes up to you and says, you know, here's the 30-minute version of Dune, they will pay a lot more attention to it and they'll understand things like spice and all of that. It's the same content, but the story's been told in a far clearer way. And I think what Nokia are doing now, you know, with Bell, is they have a consistent and coherent story. They have the people who have the ability to tell, and they have the people that people want to listen to tell the story. I mean, I think Rafe, you can probably draw here that Nokia in the last year as a company to listen to from a press and reporter's point of view has been a far nicer company to talk to. And it's you want to hear about Symbian now.
Well, I think they've certainly sharpened up their message. I mean, this goes along with the kind of the transition that happened with Windows Phone and Stephen Elop. But it's been a lot tighter in the way they've sort of talked about their product messaging. And I think that does, I mean, undoubtedly have a impact on the way it's perceived and the way that the press write about it. I mean, sadly for Symbian, in some ways, I think the damage may have been done for a lot of journalists. You know, they see the word Symbian and they just sort of stop listening. That has less of an impact on the consumers, particularly, I think, in some of the markets where, you know, Nokia brand remains very strong, so India, China. In Europe, it is a problem. You know, people hear the word Symbian and they do kind of switch off. And I think, you know, going back to the point about technology versus perception, there's no doubt at all in my mind, you know, it's not unusual at all for, you know, a superior technology to not win. I mean, that's always happened. You know, the classic Betamax case is always cited. But I think, you know, it is very important to get the messaging, to get the marketing right. And as Ewan says, the way you tell the story is very important. I mean, I would say that's sort of expressed in all the talk, all the chat. And of course, you know, it's actually a very technical subject itself in some ways around user experience. You know, it's the way that you use it, not what you do with the technology, not what it is that is important. And that's been expressed in various marketing campaigns. But you can say it, but actually taking action on it are two different things. And I think you could probably look back at the history of Nokia and Symbian over the last few years, and at times the technology became more important than how you used it, and that was probably one of their failings. And that's where the genius really of Apple came in, is, you know, packaging up, making it a desirable product, making it easy to use. And a lot of the things that are, you know, considered standard were in Symbian a long time ago, and there's still things that Symbian does that no other platform does. At least not as effectively, and you think about power management or, you know, VoIP calling or some of the more, you know, deeply integrated bits of the operating system from the technology point of view. And they have, you know, real benefits, but unless they're taken full advantage of, you know, that's not going to have the impact that you might think it will. So, yes, it's a very important lesson to learn.
I'm shocked to think that David thinks that older devices which don't have touchscreens might not be useful anymore, by the way. And just on that subject, guys, this is our 200th Insight podcast. Just looking back over the last decade, I guess, of Symbian, just each of you, I perhaps pick one favorite phone, not the phone you thought was the very best over the decade, because that would probably be biased heavily towards the latter end of the decade, but the phone, the Symbian powered phone that you loved the most, you absolutely loved, as in it brought a smile to your heart as you picked it up each day. Maybe I can go around the team on this one. Ewan first.
Let's see. I mean, it was an interesting one here because I've used the E75 the most. It was QWERTY, it was small, it was solid, you could hammer nails in with it, it ran forever. It was the most reliable thing, but I'm not going for that. I mean, the N95, I think, was probably the most practical. Sorry, the N95 8 gig, I'll stress that, I'd much preferred the black one, was a far practical one. But in terms of unconditional, without reservation love, I think it has to be the Engage QD. It was a slight refinement of the Taco design. It allows you to put the SSDs in without taking the battery out. It was small, it was compact, it looked unique. The games that came out for it, especially in the later run, I mean, once they came out with Snakes, which was just fast and glorious, and Hex Grids, and was everything that I would expect a modern mobile arcade to be then, and still holds itself up today very well. Things like Pathway to Glory, which has never been surpassed in mobile on any platform, in my opinion. Things like Rifts, things like the first digital version of Kid Catan, Settlers of Catan came out on the QD, throwing your MP3 player, admittedly with a 2.5mm jack, but there you go, you just carry the adapter with you. Very long battery life, had all the functionality you had in S60 V1 when it was still called Series 60. Yeah, that was the one. It was small, it was compact, it ran forever, it played the games, it got your data, it had Opera on it. You know, if they just iterated that design on and on and on up to nowadays, I would have been quite happy.
Yeah, I guess it would have been like a PSP Go or similar. Yeah, and that was from 2004-ish.
No, not the PSP Go. That's just a travesty, Steve. No, the PSP 2000, maybe, yes. Right. Or the PS Vita, Feb 22nd, here we go. But not the Go, no.
We should mention that Ewan's a bit of a PSP expert. You run your own podcast, don't you? What's the name of that, by the way? Just give me some.
It's at playstation.thepodcastcorner.com, and at the moment we're gearing up, of course, to that Europe and US launch on February the 22nd of the hardware. And, you know, as a side thing there, Sony continued to iterate. The PSP was initially released back in 2004 in Japan, so it's been running almost 8 years as a hardware out in the UK for 6 years from 2006, you know. So in terms of Hart and David, you know, hardware that, you know, from a long ago that nobody uses, PSP's, you know, still one of the big sellers at Christmas is the E1000 unit. So, you know, I think there's counterfactual evidence out there.
Yeah, we're going back almost a decade for Symbian. David, of the last, well, I guess, 4 or 5 years for you, which was the device you loved the most?
Well, it would be easy for me to say the E72 because it did do everything. And it came to my first Nokia World with me. I handled all my communications on it. But I want to go back a little further. My first true smartphone was the Nokia E51. And when you think about it, it was quite a limited device. Slow processor, tiny screen.
2-inch screen, yeah.
Yeah. And it was only a 12-key keypad. But it was my first true smartphone. And it took perseverance, but I could do everything on it. At the time, it was great to actually be able to have my phone and my PDA all in one device. And I paid for the upgrades to QuickOffice and Adobe Reader, and I bought CorePlayer. So I was able to, and I did, edit Office documents on it.
On a 2-inch screen.
Yeah. And I was reading ebooks in PDF form on it. I actually read Dostoevsky's The Idiot on that 2-inch screen.
You know, there's such an easy one there, David. You that
and I would watch videos on it. I watched movies on that little 2-inch screen. And even sticking Google Maps on it, it didn't have GPS, but it could still work out where it was thanks to a cell tower location. And it was built like a tank. It was just such a glorious, shiny, stainless steel body. It looked great. And it was so small and thin as well. It wasn't obtrusive. It wasn't like, oh, look, I've got a big N95 smartphone. It just looked like a normal phone unless you looked a little bit closer and saw the application keys and what I was actually doing on the screen. And I have to say, by the time I stopped using it, the chrome had really worn off the D-pad.
Yeah, the E51 was built like an absolute tank. My wife had it as her main phone for 2 years after me, and she'd basically tried to destroy it, I'm sure, in many different ways, including submerging it in water for a length of time, and nothing killed it. And eventually, I put it on the prize pool on my phone show chat podcast, plug, and somebody picked it over several big modern touchscreen smartphones because they really fancied the E51 and the fact they wanted something that's small and with long battery life and that was survivable. So there's still a lot to be said for some of these older phones. Before I go on to my own picks, Rafe, what was the device that you loved the most over the last decade?
Well, I was tempted to pick something more recent, especially after we've had some golden oldies there. And I will say that I'm very fond of sort of some of the most recent ones, you know, picking out, again, like David, the E72, but also the C7 spent a long time in my pocket when I actually had multiple other choices. But I think if we're talking, you know, favorite, personal favorite, I think I have to go back to my very first Symbian smartphone. And that was the Sony Ericsson P800, which I think, I mean, I said this in the last podcast, I think many ways ahead of its time. It was running UIQ, touchscreen phone. And, you know, it had Sony Ericsson kind of design features, things like the five-way jog wheel. It had a keypad that kind of flipped up and then pressed down onto the touchscreen to work. And so you could use it in kind of a flip-close mode where you just saw summary information, then it would open up to not a massive screen, but, you know, bigger than most touchscreens were at that time. So it was, you know, the forerunner of the slate touch phones we have today. And, you know, it did music, it did video, it did limited internet, of course. I think it was 2G device, so you're limited to GPRS, maybe Edge, I can't remember the exact technical details, and the camera certainly wasn't anything to write home about, but it did bring home to me what the modern smartphone meant.
Yeah,
in the sense that it did a lot of the functionality that we now take for granted, you know, gone on massively since then, but it was such a massive step up from your bog standard mobile phone. Before that, I think I'd had just a very basic Philips phone that, you know, it did calling and text messaging. It wasn't very good, and I only had it because, you know, I was away and needed some way of keeping in touch with base. And so the P800 was actually the first phone I bought myself, not that someone bought for me. So it was, you know, my first really big individual purchase, I suppose, that was for me. And, you know, it had this lovely blue colour. It sat really in the hand. It, you know, looking at it now, I've got it in front of me right now. I've kept it in my drawer so I can, you know, have the emotional attachment to it. It's kind of a big blue lump. But at the time, it just felt it was small. It was amazing. It did all this stuff that, you know, that you used to use a computer for. And so it was a total revelation. And that's kind of what got me into mobile, into Symbian, into smartphones in a big way. So it will always have a very special place in my heart. But I also think it's a good selection because in some ways it predicted a lot of what came along later. And in that sense, as I said last week, UIQ and the P800 was way, way ahead of its time.
Yeah, but I just have to say, I remember looking at P800 on the web when it first came out, and to me it was a real aspirational product. I really want one, and it was kind of before I was kind of in smartphones and getting review things, and I couldn't actually afford it at the time. But you were saying about first phones, and I just had to throw this in. My very first mobile phone was by no means a smartphone. It was called a Philips Digia, and its SIM card was mounted in a piece of plastic that was actually a full credit card size.
I remember them because I remember my wife Vicky's first mobile was the Motorola MR13. It was credit card size. It was a credit card size SIM, and I remember it because it's the only phone that I've ever seen that has survived being driven over by a Ford Transit minibus.
Well,
you would not do that with a smartphone nowadays.
Talking of the P800, David, yeah, I actually had to save up for this because I knew it was coming because it got announced a long way in advance, and I'd been saving up for it for a long time. You know, this is back when I was a very poor student, and I went into the Orange shop on the day it launched, having saved up, only to find out it was a bit more expensive than I thought it was going to be. So I had to wait another couple of months. I think I went back, I raided the bank account or something. But the other thing I remember about that is agonizing over which Orange World package to get. And the Orange World package was how you got data GPRS on the phone. And in the end, I plumped for the premium option, and I got Orange World 4 or 5, I can't remember the exact number, which meant I got 4 megabytes of data with the phone, which I thought was just an enormous amount and would do everything I needed.
Is that per month?
And that was per month, yes. So things have changed a bit since then, and the idea that you could get by on 5 megabytes of data over an entire month is kind of laughable now. Especially
unless you're on AT&T in America.
Well, that's true. Especially, I think I'm right in saying the P800 didn't have Wi-Fi built in. I'll have to check that.
Yeah,
because I remember having to have a little infrared serial port on my desk, and I was great because I thought I could put my phone down here and I can get an infrared connection to this port, to the serial port, to the laptop, to go into the Ethernet connection at work, and then I don't have to pay data charges and I can test all these apps without running up a bill. Ooh, clever me.
Yeah. I was going to pick the P800 as well. It's one of my favorites there, Ray, but you kind of stole my thunder, so I'm just going to shift it slightly. I love the P800. I love the fact that it was all one piece. You had this flip bit on the front, but as you say, the keys pressed through mechanically onto a touchscreen underneath. There were actually no moving parts that had, that had electronics in them. Nothing, no ribbon cables, no coils, nothing to go wrong. So basically the P800, I bet if you powered yours up and charged yours up, Rafe, it would work quite happily today.
Yep. Yeah, no, I'm sure it would. I mean, I powered it up not that long ago just for the nostalgia value, and it was all still working just fine.
Yeah, so
it was that little number pad could come off as well, because you got a little slip in the bottom of the box, if you remember, Steve.
Yeah.
So if you didn't want the keypad, you could just make it a touchscreen slab.
And that really was very futuristic. It's amazing to think how far ahead of their time Sony Ericsson were with that particular design, and how far ahead UIQ was specifically. And it's a real shame that through various factors that eventually wound down. Also on my hot list, I guess, I was going to mention the E72, but Dave has stole my thunder there as well. It's still a cracking little all-in-one phone. I still use it to this day every now and then when I want something to really last a long time. I'll be away from charging points. The E72 just really can do absolutely everything. It does nothing particularly well, but it does absolutely everything in a totally indestructible package with a battery that lasts forever, and there's nothing to break. So, also the Nokia 9500, the kind of the Generation 2 communicator running Series 80 version 2, I guess it was. I guess this was around 2004, 2005. I loved the communicator range, starting with the original Scion palm tops, then the Nokia 9210. I missed out on the Nokia 100, which I think, Ewan, did you ever have that one?
Hold on a second, we've not done this in years. There we go. It's the old Scion boxer mentioning Scion on the podcast. The 9210 was... Yeah, I still got one of them kicking around.
The 9110, the Geos one.
Geos, yeah. I skipped the 91. I had the 9000i. And essentially what the 9110 was the 9000i, but put on a slight die and with sharp edges instead of fancy curves. Yeah, it did the job. It wasn't very fantastic, though. And I think the one thing that I didn't like about the 9110 is that the interface was lifted over into the 9210. And what we had before as a wonderful GUI under Icon was suddenly not there anymore. And it all got dumbed down and consumers and ready for the mass market instead of us techie geek heads and stuff.
Girl. I guess at some point you're going to mention your color screen, Scion Revo, with comms built in and whatever.
The one had Bluetooth built in 3G and was codenamed Hercules. No, we don't mention that.
yeah, it's a great shame that Nokia kind of lost the touch functionality that they had up in the Scion operating system when they moved to the communicator range. But the 9300, the 9500, they really did the job. And although they weren't great for multimedia, as a messaging device and just for keeping in touch with the world, they really were second to none. The multitasking worked fabulously. And those full QWERTY keyboards, I think, still have to be better even to this day. So I have a soft spot for that. I've still got all of these devices in my cupboard somewhere. I'm going to plump overall for one of the most recent devices mentioned on this podcast, which is the Nokia N86. I've done various features, pimping it and loving it and featuring it on the site. People must have utterly fed up with mentioning it by now, so I have promised never to write about it again. But the N86, I'll give you an idea of my love for this device. It's the ultimate incarnation of the dual slide concept the N95 started. And I love it so much, just occasionally, when I take it out of its box and I fondle it, I then light it with a spot lamp and I try taking arty photographs of it. And I've got all sorts of arty photos of the keypads and the multimedia control just glowing gently, taken with my N8 with the flash off. So really arty photograph, trying to create the ultimate N86 photo. And that sounds really, really sad. But he did say the phone we loved the most, and I loved my N86. For one brief moment last year on my own podcast, I contemplated selling it and just raising a bit of cash, and I bitterly regretted it a week later. And luckily, no one took me up on it. And I'm so glad they didn't, because I still love that device. So, we're coming right up on the just a half an hour mark, guys. What I'd like to do is, it's been a great retrospective looking backwards, but we would like to look forwards as well. Next week, we're going to take some of the software items and news items, and we'll sort of do a catch-up special. And also looking ahead to Mobile World Congress, which I think is about 3 or 4 weeks' time, Rafe.
Yes, that's right. It's sort of due to kick off around February the 25th, running through to March the 1st. And there's still a lot to come from Symbian. I think people are going to be pretty excited with some of the announcements that are coming down the line. And yes, looking forward, I mean, we've spent this one looking back at the previous 200, but I'm pretty confident that given enough time, we'll get to 300.
That's another 100 Insight podcast. Gulp, big gulp. And a last goodbye from you, Mr. David Gilson.
Goodbye, everybody, and I'm looking forward to seeing what's coming next in the Symbian story.
And a farewell from Ewan.
I'd just like to say I think Symbian is dead and buried. Nobody's going to buy it. Elon burned the company. He jumped off the platform. It will be dead within 3 months. And given the predictions that we made in Insight number 1 and Insight number 100, I'm going to be happy to look back at this prediction in 300 and say, you know what? I think I was wrong.
The pity you can't see a tongue-in-cheek over on an audio podcast. I think we definitely need some graphics and video there, Ian. A last goodbye from Mr. Ray Blandford.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for listening to not only this podcast, but the previous 199. And please stick with us for the next for the next 100.
Yes, we shall all be here next week. Don't worry. I'll be here hopefully healthy by then. This has been Steve Litchfield. This has been the All About Symbian Insight podcast. We'll see you very soon. Bye for now.